This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Miss Powell, this booming voice came all the way across the department store. And my mom and I turned to see this tall, slender man with a full beard and mustache running toward her. I could tell she did not readily recognize him. And he exclaimed as he got closer to her, It's me, Scotty. And she went, oh my word, Scotty. And as he got to her, he picked her up and just spun her around in this bear hug. And I'm like, what in the world? And then he said, you remember me, right? The seventh grade. And she said, of course, Scotty Rollins, I remember you. And he just hugged her again. And he said, you were my favorite teacher of all times. You have no idea how much you did for me. Well, apparently, he was kind of a troubled kid, had not a great home life, and as my mom would say, was kind of on the wrong track. But she knew how smart he was. And he said to her, I'm a doctor now at Emory Hospital. Well, my mom was beaming with pride because she had always seen it in him. She knew it. And she winked at me later and said, I was right about another one. Today, y'all, I'm so excited to have Dr. Michael Bodden with us, America's physician. He's a board-certified forensic pathologist. He's worked numerous high-profile deaths. He was the host of HBO's Autopsy. He was the chief medical examiner for New York City for a little bit. And he was chairman of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. He looked at the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. He's worked cases that you know, such as O.J. Simpson, John Belushi, the murder of George Floyd, Aaron Hernandez, and others. The people in the media sometimes refer to him as a death correspondent. But just like my mother knew Scotty was destined for good things, I believe Dr. Bodden's mama knew that he was too. Please help me welcome Dr. Michael Bodden.
Thank you, Cheryl. Great to be with to see you again and be with you.
Oh, it's great to see you again. Last time we were together with your lovely bride, I just did not have enough time with y'all. That's all there was to it. But I want people to know something because I think this is so important as a mama and as a former college professor. You got into a little bit of trouble as a kid yourself, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. You do good research. I was in reform school as a kid. And I don't remember all the details, but I was my parents had a great deal of trouble dealing with me when I was growing up in the Bronx at 6 years of age. I was kicked out of kindergarten in the Bronx public school system, I guess, for being disruptive.
But your mama always said you should be a doctor. She saw it. She knew.
You're absolutely right. And there were two things about it, actually. She was the guiding force that I should be a doctor. That's what you wanted. And in those days, when I grew up in the Bronx, doctors made house calls. And there was a pediatrician doctor named Aaron, and last name Aaron, who came every time I was sick, not sick often, but, and I was very impressed with him. He was amazing, coming and looking in my throat and taking out my tonsils on the kitchen table. In those days, they used to do that. But it was my mother who, like your mother, was the guiding, knew things in advance.
Absolutely. So since you wanted to be a doctor and you were, you know, enamored with Dr. Aaron, what made you go into pathology and not work with live patients?
That's a very perceptive question, because my mother thought that doctors made people healthy and that I would be an internal medicine doctor when I was admitted to NYU School of Medicine in Manhattan. I went to City College, New York, admitted to NYU Medical School, and wanted to be an internist. It so happened that at that time, NYU was still is associated with Bellevue Hospital, right next door. And the morgue, for the NYU Medical School, for Bellevue Hospital, and for the Medical Examiner's Office of New York City, was in the basement at Bellevue Hospital. And there was a morgue in a special pathology building at Bellevue, on a Bellevue Hospital grounds. As a medical student, we were doing autopsies, do dissections of bodies that had been soaked in formaldehyde for a year or so. And there was shriveled up bodies. And they didn't really look like bodies. But in the Bellevue morgue, it was, there were people who looked like they were alive yesterday. And it was amazed me of the wonders of the inside body. But what's also interesting, to bring me up to date a little bit, the first time I went down to see an autopsy, there was a line of doctors in white coats outside the autopsy room. And I said, I'm a medical student, and I was told I can go see an autopsy. And when the doctor said, yeah, this is a good place to see it, but not on this body because it looks like it's smallpox. This is in 1955. I'm a first year medical student. The doctors are outside of the autopsy room because they won't go inside because smallpox is contagious. I went in. I said, look, I'm told I could go in, and everybody had the smallpox vaccinations in those days, little punctures on the outside of the upper arm. And I went in, and it was Dr. Milton Halpern, who was the chief medical examiner, and nobody was there to help him with the autopsy because everybody was afraid of there might be smallpox. So I helped him by moving around the lights that he was using to take photographs. It looked like somebody with all these hemorrhagic pox on their body, and helped him. It turned out that wasn't smallpox. It was hemorrhagic chickenpox. But because I was there and I helped him, he sort of immediately took me under his wing. And I could go down anytime and see an autopsy. They taught me how to do autopsies. And that's what really got me interested in pathology rather than in internal medicine.
Well, you know, I often tell people the morgue offers mystery that even a hospital doesn't offer. And it gives you a chance, in your case especially, to be somewhat fearless in your research. Because you walked into a room, I mean, it could have been anything, but you did it anyway for the greater good, the greater knowledge. And I think there's no other place than a morgue to get some of those answers, especially for your investigation.
The new building of the New York City Medical Examiner's Office, a few years after I graduated, has over its admission in Latin, in the Latin phrase, let talking cease. This is the place where death delights to help the living, translated loosely from Latin. This is the place where death delights to help the living, because we learn all kinds of new things from the dead body, both about disease and all, and how people, how death can be avoided.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that. If it weren't for medical examiners, we wouldn't have airbags.
You're absolutely right. The recognition, there was a high incidence of death, and this goes back to the 1950s. People who died in auto accidents, a large percentage of them died because of facial and head injuries due to sudden stopping and the head going against the dashboard. And we would have people who would have in the foreheads fractures and imprints of the radio knobs that were on the dashboard at that time, for example. And the very fact that holding the person stationary by could avoid these deaths, prevent these deaths, came from the autopsy. And all while we were doing that kind of research, there was a great deal of research going on in the autopsy room between Bellevue Hospital, NYU Medical School, and medical examiners about the effects of cigarettes, inhaling cigarettes. And it was at that time also that the realization and its understanding was made. Smoking cigarettes wound up with people getting lung cancer 20, 30 years later, and led to all kinds of prohibitions and the statements on the cigarette packs and all that.
Especially when you think in the early years, doctors promoted cigarette smoking to relax you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. And I still have a poster here of Ronald Reagan when he was an actor. Doctors and actors who were promoting Lucky Strike.
Well, let's talk about your process when you take a second look as a medical examiner. Now, they've already had an autopsy, but you're coming and doing your own work. What is your process? How do you start that?
The process is that somebody, usually a family member, is concerned about the cause of death, concerned that the people doing the first autopsy, the medical examiner, the pathologist or the medical examiner is biased or is not knowledgeable enough to give the proper diagnosis. But that often happens with the natural deaths. When in a natural death, a person's at the hospital for weeks and individual dies. The first autopsy doesn't show the cause of death. It says the cause of death is still unknown. So the family member wants to get a second autopsy by more experienced people, they think, who might be able to find the cause of death. And also they'll suspect that the pathologist in the hospital, it may be the autopsy may show the cause of death, but it's not favorable for the hospital. So they're saying they can't find the cause of death. So one way we get contacted is a family member next to kin wants to know what the cause of death is, and they don't think the hospital did it right. Now, when there's a forensic autopsy, which is most of the time we do second autopsies, there are many families and many defense lawyers, especially, who feel that medical examiners and forensic pathologists are biased toward police and aren't going to give a straight answer if it doesn't favor the prosecution or police theory of a case, if it's a homicide, for example.
Now, how heavily do you rely personally on the police and detectives and, I would say, the original police report and things like that?
Cheryl, this is why you're so great. You have hit at the heart of problems that are happening now, the divisiveness. The fact that today I see in the news that California has passed a law preventing the use of excited delirium on death certificates people died during encounters with police. There are only about 600 forensic pathologists in the United States, full-time forensic pathologists out of about almost a million doctors. It's a very small specialty, us forensic pathologists. We're the only ones can do autopsies on unnatural deaths. 93% of us die of natural diseases, heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer. That's the expertise of the hospital pathologist, natural disease. The expertise of the forensic pathologist is goes further in training, accident, suicide, homicide, and drug abuse is fit in there. And mistakes are made because oftentimes a forensic pathologist doesn't do the, isn't available. Some states don't have a forensic pathologist in the whole state, and the autopsy is done by a hospital pathologist who's not trained in unnatural death. But the forensic pathologist, when I came in initially in the New York City Medical Examiner's office, finishing my internship residency, chief residency in pathology, I then chose my having worked in the with the medical examiners to become a forensic pathologist. Day one of forensic pathology, the chief medical examiner, the district attorney's office, the chief of police met with me and two other people starting in the New York City office. And the first thing they tell us, we are glad you're here. We want you to know that we're a team. We're like a three-legged stool. The police, the district attorney, and the medical examiners are working together to determine what happened to the dead body, and we're working as a team to convict the bad guy who's done it. We're the good guys on this team, and we're have to make sure that justice is done. And we're all working together. And we start out working closely with the police and district attorneys. So we work up and we train very closely with police. I have found over the years that this is dangerous. Most of the time, the police are right. But sometimes they aren't right in their investigations. For those who fortunately haven't had to deal with it, excited delirium is a diagnosis developed in the 1980s that when somebody dies during a police encounter, a physical police encounter, during the restraint while they're trying to put handcuffs on, a cause of death isn't found at autopsy. There's no fractures and no neck injuries. The decedent produced too much adrenaline. He was in a fight. He was in a struggle, produced too much adrenaline, and he died. And the cause of death is excited delirium, was named as the cause of death. It turns out that's it's a boutique diagnosis only applied by medical examiners, because we're the ones who determine the cause of death in these cases, to persons who died during physically while being restrained by police and turn out to be largely black male decedents. It's a biased kind of racist, considered a racist diagnosis by the, and now just recently, the American Medical Association and others, and still being used. And if something is called excited delirium, that's considered a natural death, and that's the end of the investigation. The police don't have to investigate it further. The district attorney doesn't have to investigate it further, because the district attorney doesn't want to really investigate the local police deaths if that can be avoided. And everybody's happy about it except the family members. And that's what eventually led to the whole Floyd upset, because the initial medical examiner indicated that the police restraint had nothing to do with the cause of death. And the police and the ME backed it up fully. And the family and the community made a fuss about it and led to second autopsy. I was involved in the second autopsy. But that's all changed largely because of the iPhone. 2007 is when the iPhone with the photos was photograph possibilities was introduced. And that changed things because what was captured on video often turned out not to be what the police reported the cause of death was, and has led to a lot of division among medical examiners and among in the communities.
I don't think there's any question that the iPhone and the video capability has assisted so greatly. And, you know, to me, you can't watch that video with George Floyd and not see a very slow murder.
Before the iPhone, whatever the police said was just adopted as being, you know, the truth, not the family. The iPhone has changed that.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
So I want to head to 1977 with you, and I want to quote you. You said at one time, even when an autopsy is done, the speculation doesn't stop. I thought that was such a great quote, especially if you're talking about President John Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement with studying those assassinations? Because for me, President Kennedy and Dr. King, there's so many similarities. I mean, they were both shot with a long gun by a lone gunman in the middle of the day from a structure. They both left weapons behind. Both weapons had a partial palm print. They were both shot from a distance. They were both surrounded by people they trusted. They were both at the height of their career. They were world leaders. They were both public murders. And they were both caught on film a little bit. So to me, it's almost like if you're studying both of these assassinations, some of it mirrors each other. So I just want to hear from you, the expert.
Now, there are differences, though, that happened. When Kennedy was assassinated, he goes into the Texas hospital, is pronounced dead there. The surgeon who attended to him was then interviewed and says there was a bullet hole in the neck, entrance bullet hole in the neck, and that was the reason that he died. The body is then illegally taken to Washington, D.C., because the autopsy should have been done legally in Texas. When somebody dies, the jurisdiction of the medical examiner, coroner investigation depends on where a person dies. Wherever the person dies, that jurisdiction does the autopsy examination. In this situation, for various reasons, the body was taken up to D.C. improperly. The Secret Service said that, well, they were concerned that maybe whoever shot Kennedy would also shoot his wife or something, and they wanted to get him out of there. And there was a confrontation in the hospital, a morgue there between the Secret Service and the medical examiner's office before it was taken. The body was taken out. And I mention that because when the autopsy was done in D.C. By a physician, hospital physician, he looked at the body, did not call the doctors in Parkland Hospital in Texas to see what did you do to the body in treatment, which medical examiners always do, because if you provide medications or draw blood, it leaves needle marks. And we can't tell when we do the autopsy who did the needle marks, drug addict or the doctor. They look the same. In this instance, the one doctor, the surgeon, looked at the neck, saw there was a perforation, a bullet hole of entrance, and then did an incision through it, a tracheostomy incision, to put down a breathing device. The doctor in D.C., who's then brought to do the autopsy, didn't appreciate that there was a hole in the neck. He just thought it was the doctor did it. He didn't. You can see it if you look closely, but it was cut through. But that wasn't what he was used to looking at. He was looking at cancer cells or so. He turns the body over to examine the back, which is proper in autopsy. We always have to look at the back, and sees a bullet hole in the back. The doctors in Park in Texas didn't do that because as soon as they did their attempts to revive the president, he didn't get revived, and he died right there without the inspecting the back. He then announces in Washington, D.C. that there's a bullet hole in the back. He doesn't appreciate that's the exit wound. You see, the bullet goes in the front, comes out the back, and he announces that there's an entrance wound in the back. He doesn't know anything about an entrance wound in the front, but the newspapers immediately say, hey, he was shot once in the front and once in the back, two shooters. Therefore, day one, day two, there was a concern that this was raised, that this was two shooters. Now, in addition to that, when I grew up, there was a program that we all as kids loved called the Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger was the one good guy who could beat up lots of bad guys. He was my hero, a lot of heroes. It was on radio every evening, the Lone Ranger. Part of that is, and part of that gets ingrained, if you have a good guy like Kennedy being killed, that one bad guy can't kill the president. And we have a concept then, it's changing even slowly nowadays, that you need more than one bad guy to kill a good guy.
And it's interesting you say that about people not wanting to accept one person can do great harm. You had the same issue with O.J. Simpson. People said there had to be more than one person. One person couldn't kill two people like that. Of course one person could kill two people like that.
That's right. And I think with O.J. Simpson, there's still a division.
Well, going back to Dr. King, there was some black powder around his neck, and a lot of people thought, well, he had to be shot up close then because that's gunpowder. But that's not necessarily the case at all. We know that.
Yeah. With Dr. King, the initial concerns there was that when the shooting occurred, the moment the shooting occurred, there were witnesses on the terrace, on the motel terrace with King, who pointed to different spots where it came from. Where so that there's, from that point, there were newspaper articles about more than one shooter.
Given your career, and you have looked at death more than most people would ever be able to look at death, and you've examined it, and you've researched it, and you've given your opinion, how has your job changed your life or the way you live your life?
The most common misapprehension, I think, that people have, and this you can see this not only from just thoughts, but also from the old movies, that the morgue is a desperately terrible place to be working in, and frightening and haunted and ugly place to work in. And it must make people depressed. I started out as we alluded to with my mother's idea that I would be a doctor for living people. And I started in internal medicine at before switching to pathology. And the most troubling thing to me, upsetting thing to me, treating patients, was those people who are dying that we could not help. People dying of cancer and people dying of brain damage that we weren't too familiar with diagnosing Alzheimer's disease then, but we knew that people were getting older and confused and nothing that we could do about it. That was very upsetting and troublesome. Going to the morgue and dealing with a dead person, right off, there's no pain involved. That person on the autopsy table has no pain that that we have to deal with. And what our job is to see how the autopsy will help the family, number one, and society, number two. When I say society, because like with COVID or with smallpox decades ago, if we were to diagnose such causes of death that we know are very contagious, we're part of the public health system to be able to try and limit the number of people who are going to get infected. But you don't want to know to limit people until you know they died from something that's contagious. That's public health. When somebody dies of suicide, we try to find out, were there any ways of preventing it? This has been a big issue in prisons, for example. I became got involved with checking all prison deaths and jail deaths in New York State after the Attica uprising, because one of the reasons for Attica in 1971, where 43 people died, including 10 guards, was caused because the inmates felt that when prisoners died, the deaths were of bad medicine, of being beaten up by the guards, of suicide. It was all covered. Everybody was called death from heart disease, and it was covered up. And so it required that Governor Rockefeller passed a law, signed a law that created a commission to look into every death that occurs in New York State and in prison, jail, or lockup. And immediately, when we're able to get to do autopsies, to get data on all of the deaths, which were never available before, we could find out that, hey, there are ways to prevent the deaths. Example, we found out that the most common cause of death in those days was suicide by hanging. The hanging occurred in the bathroom when there were no guards present, and they'd hang up to the shower curtain rods So once we found that out, we passed, we advised and passed the legislation that all of the shower rods should be collapsible. And so that if they go in, there's nobody watching them and they want to hang up, they can't commit suicide. And that's true. We found out that there was another, by looking at all the deaths, and I say all the deaths in the prisons, when people died during tear gassing because they were uncontrollable, they weren't behaving themselves, a large number of deaths occurred because they were being they couldn't breathe, they were being choked to death during the tear gassing. And so we passed rules and regulations that tear gassing has to be watched by a supervisor, and it can't be done by the guards who were going in there with tear gas because they had a bad episode with the individual. That cut out all tear gassing deaths that were supervised. Same thing, I think, happens now with deaths during during police encounters. That in order to cut down on the deaths, the medical examiners can help by getting a database together. Remember, all those deaths during police restraint, a great majority of them, are reported to medical examiners. And so if we were able to get some kind of a national database on how people died during police encounters, we'd be able to develop some kind of strategies to diminish the deaths. As happened in New York in the prison situation, fewer deaths now with more prisoners in New York State prisons than were present at the time of Attica when there were a third as many inmates present.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
These stats that you know just off the top of your head because you lived it, that's why when you look at a case like Jeffrey Epstein, you know that there's something really unusual with the breaks in that neck that you, if you've never seen it before, Why would it just be so easily accepted?
Well, Epstein's death is very interesting because he died in a federal jail, federal prison, jail really, in Manhattan. The New York State law didn't cover that jail. If he had died in a New York State jail, the commission I was on would automatically investigate the death. They had all kinds of people to do investigations. Epstein died in a federal prison. Therefore, the FBI investigates the death and the Justice Department investigates the death. They do not have much experience investigating suicidal deaths, number one, as the New York City police do, for example. And when the first autopsy was done, though, it showed, and I was present at the autopsy, that there were three fractures in the Adam's apple and the hyoid bone, which is just above it, which is typical for homicidal strangulation. It's atypical for hanging, because in hanging, the rope, as with Epstein, it would have gone up under the jawbone. It's people hanging, the ligature slips up under the mandible, the jawbone, and that's where you see the mark. With Epstein, he had the mark in the middle of the neck over the Adam's apple, and there were three fractures, which extremely rare, which I've never seen, and I haven't seen reported in suicidal hanging. And it turned out later, which we just received the result of the Justice Department investigation, that he was found seated. It wasn't even hanging up. With hanging up, there's more pressure on the neck than being seated, because there's less weight. And so it is even less likely to get any fracture seated than hanging. And the problem was, though, that the Justice Department and the FBI investigation didn't focus on differences of opinion or so. They focused on security. And according to their investigation, nobody else had access to Epstein. Therefore, he must have done it himself. Which is powerful evidence if it's true. But the fact is that the videos of his cell and of his cell tier weren't working that day. And that night, and the three or four correction officers who were scheduled to watch it, to watch the eight cells where they were, special housing, didn't do it. They didn't do any, and see, this is another situation where that probably happens a lot. I gather from the investigation where the guards that are supposed to make 15-minute or half-hour rounds don't make the rounds. But because this was a prominent person, it came to light. And therefore, there's a established certain amount of differences of opinion. In my opinion about Epstein, his fractures are much more typical for homicidal strangulation and not ligature hanging suicide. But maybe there is some kind of there always can be exceptions, but the general media acceptance has been that it was suicide because of the investigation by the FBI and Justice Department into the security of the his inability to. Other people's inability to get in to do it to him.
Well, I often tell people, if you want to know what's going on in your town, look in the jail. And if you want to know the problems, ask the medical examiner, because they're going to know about the drugs before anybody else, diseases, homicides, car crashes. So again, Doctor, I appreciate so much you being with us and sharing so many things with us, not just your career and your opinions, but also, you know, your upbringing. Because I think your story of getting kicked out of preschool and going on to be the top of your class at NYU Medical School is just remarkable. And it just goes to show, again, don't count nobody out just because they may be misbehaving at 6 or 14 or 20. Give them a chance to correct that, you know, path, and you might just be surprised and, in your case, become a world-renowned forensic pathologist.
Well, I must say, very much appreciate your mom's insight into Scotty, that Scotty also had problems, apparently, and became a doctor. Amazing. Thank you, Cheryl.
Absolutely. Thank you again. And please give Linda my regards, and I hope to see y'all and talk again very soon. Y'all, I'm going to end Zone 7 like I always do with a quote. Wherever the art of medicine is loved, there is also a love of humanity. Hippocrates. I'm Cheryl McCollum, and this is Zone 7.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.